Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Saturday morning. Hope everybody's having a great one across the country and the world. It's that time again. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by Dr. Greg Roscoe, live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly playing co-host and producing, Mark Mancini from Los Angeles. 347-205-9631. This show goes an hour now, starting today, so catch the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay that red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Doc, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third of all, we are going to recap loss, taste, and smell, and talk about hearing aids in this hour.
Mark, that's a lot. And, you know, as always, your questions are good. They're timely. We're doing well all across the board. So we're doing well. Our practice is doing well. The patients are doing well. And hopefully we're being an asset to Mancini Media. Get a hold of me if you need, want to go ahead and ask any questions or any advice, GJRMD308@outlook.com, GJRMD308@outlook.com. And then, Mark, the topic today, you know, it's an hour. So I have a variety of things to keep our interest in our show today, but we sure are taking calls. And we'll be answering questions. You know, I've done a little scenario on loss of senses over the last couple of weeks. Those senses being our hearing, our taste, our smell. And what I'd like to talk about today, and again, a variety of other things, is that with our loss of hearing, with regard to how do we fix it? You know, how do we make it better? What are the options today? And, you know, we all know a little bit about hearing aids, and we know about implantable hearing aids. The thing I wanted to add today that I thought would be a lot of interest is stem cell therapy, the newest thing on the horizon to really help us with our hearing. And it looks as though there is going to be some help for us. And, again, something we can talk about. It's not out there yet. But it could be within about 5 years, Mark, we may be able to go ahead and inject stem cells into damaged ears, regenerate the normal hearing cells, and have our patients hear without hearing aids or amplifications or without cochlear implants. So that's kind of the gist of things. And, Mark, you know, normally what stimulates our conversations, I try to get a little bit of a patient history from our files and to kind of give you a little bit of a clinical picture. And if I can proceed, Mark, unless you want to give us a few questions, I have a little story on a patient I'd like to tell, but I'll turn it over to you there in L.A. if you have something.
Yeah, basically I got Ralph Williams coming out of Pittsburgh listening to the show. Loves it, and also Sal from Germantown talking about, God, the hour is great. We love this. And I've got some questions on, you know, the volume of these hearing aids. When you put them in, sometimes it gets a little sensitive to put in your ear, and the volume is a kind of a tricky part. So I'll sit back and hear your comments on that, and I'll take some more questions from these great listeners across the board. Doc, well, as you break down your little story.
Let me give you a little story. You know, it's a very nice story. It ends up very well, by the way. We had about a 63-year-old male come in the office, very frustrated, a little bit angry, wanted to hear our story about hearing aids. He had been to the big box stores, had been to another professional that, you know, did the hearing aid sales and pitches, spent quite a bit of money so far, still couldn't hear. His wife said, you know, go in there, maybe see Dr. Roscoe, see what we can do. That kind of laid the groundwork from it. Again, like I'm saying, a little angry, a little frustrated, felt he had been ripped off a little bit, spending money on hearing aids and can't hear. We went ahead, gave him an appointment, started our workup, questioning, you know, remember, Mark, I talk about the four pillars. We talk about a good history, an examination, diagnostic testing, and then decision-making. And, Mark, it's the same with every case. So it's nothing, you know, it's the old story, but, Mark, it's the old shoe that does fit and really helps us get some results. And, you know, just a little aside here, you know, it's not that I standardize care, standardize process. You know, it's like one shoe fits all. It's not like that. We really try to customize our care in our practice, but we use those pillars to guide us with each patient's problem. So I wanted to make that, you know, clear, Mark, for our listeners. Mark, he came in, we listened, went ahead, looked at the hearing aids that he had, looked at his ears. We tested him audiometrically. And, you know, the hearing aids were so-so, in, you know, in solving his problem. However, what we found was that he needed to have some corrective surgery on the one ear. The other ear was rightfully hearing aided. However, this man was paying for the hearing aids. So kind of getting to the gist of it, after our listening to his history, examining him, testing him, Mark, he needed to have surgery on the one ear. He had something called otosclerosis, which is like arthritis of the hearing bones. We were able to correct that, remove the arthritic hearing bones, and then place synthetic prosthesis in that ear. Mark, things worked out well. He was able to hear almost normally in that ear. Now, the other ear, he did have nerve damage in. We were able to, Mark, get him the appropriate hearing aid through one of our agencies in Pennsylvania called OVR, Office of Vocational Rehabilitation, and that was at no cost to him. So that it took us 2 or 3 months of process and care, but, Mark, we had got rid of one hearing aid, almost normal hearing in one ear, and then, of course, we had OVR help us with paying for a hearing aid for him. And my point of that story is, you know, let's compromise someplace else. Don't compromise on your health care. You know, going to the big box, going to Walmart, going to other type dealers where, you know, you think you're getting a deal. Just remember, don't compromise. Get the best opinion you can with your health care. Mark, so that kind of is setting the stage for this today. So that maybe that'll help our listeners to say, hey, let me see what I need. You know, maybe it's more than just a hearing aid. Maybe there is something there that can be remedied, but I don't need a hearing aid. But you need your healthcare professional to help guide you.
Well, let me throw two questions to you, then I'm going to run this board while you comment on it and take it from here for the next few minutes. Robin from Clearwater, you know, Gail from Clearwater, along with Robin from Youngstown, a couple great guests that come in each and every week. Robin basically says with the hearing aids, how about the price of these things? I know with inflation and everything, some can be extraordinarily priced out. Some can be good, but are the good ones as good as the overpriced ones? And I'll let you elaborate on that one. And then Gail coming in from Clearwater says, guys, keep up the great show. It's picking up steam down here in Florida. I tell everybody about it. And, boy, the hour is good. It won't be long before you guys are doing 2 hours. Wow.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
So I'll let you comment on those two questions. I'll go run the board for a minute, and I'll be back in a couple seconds and minutes.
Surely. Thank you very much for the questions. If we, you know, we started, I think the one question had to do with the pricing of hearing aids. And, again, as always, you know, we need to be good consumers. meaning that it doesn't hurt to get a second opinion. There are a variety of brands. There are a variety of dealers. There are a variety of professionals in the marketplace today. And it goes from the big box stores, Walmart, Sam's, Costco, where you can then go to a hearing aid dealer that is licensed, trained, but his background is basically fitting hearing aids. And then, of course, the next level is our doctor, whether it's a doctor of audiology or an ENT doctor that does that kind of work. And, you know, if we're going out into the workplace or the marketplace looking for a deal, there are deals. Walmart, of course, you know, has their deal, very inexpensive. Realize they're doing amplification, and they're not looking at your eardrum. They're not looking at your hearing bones, and you're paying for an amplification, which is a lower-end type item. Now, they're starting to sell hearing aids, but you need to make sure that's what you need with regard to a product. And, again, it's always good to have a professional that can test you, examine your body, and then fit the appropriate product. You know, in the one case I just talked about, this gentleman had had, I believe, two or three hearing aids in the one ear. And this problem with his ear was progressively getting worse. I'm talking about arthritis. The hearing bones were getting stiffer and stiffer. And, of course, the hearing aids weren't keeping up with that, if you will. And the dealer that he was getting them at wasn't aware of what the problem was. And, indeed, we were able to go ahead, surgically repair the problem, and the man does not wear a hearing aid today in that ear. So we want that kind of care for our patients. Now, having said all that, you know, I mentioned before about hearing aids being based and price being based on power, meaning that there's the four-cylinder automobile, six-cylinder, and then eight-cylinder. Well, the four-cylinder is far less expensive than the six-cylinder or eight-cylinder. Same thing with hearing aids. We have the ones that are of low power, moderate power, and then a lot of power. And, again, along that chain, the price does go up because you're getting a more complex instrument. And, again, you can go dealer to dealer, but you always want to make sure you have a good hearing test of what your condition is, that your ears are clean, and that there's no medical condition there that's rectifiable causing the problem. And, you know, realize people that are selling hearing aids are salespeople. They do push their products. They do push their guarantees and warranties. But you want to go ahead and get two, if not three, opinions. Prices do vary. You can buy a moderately priced hearing aid for between $1,200 and $1,400. You can find that same hearing aid at a brand name dealer across the country for $4,000 to $5,000. For the same product.
Wow.
And realize, yes, absolutely. And, you know, when you are buying hearing aids, really what you're after is the right fit, but you also want follow-up care. You would like to make sure that you can come back in a couple of weeks, maybe get it readjusted, and then down the road in 2 or 3 months, maybe the tubing needs to be cleaned or changed. Maybe that ear needs to be cleaned. Possibly your hearing is changing. So you want to go to a facility that's able to take care of changes in your body. And, you know, we can sure talk about the parts of a hearing aid, et cetera, but realize this, different states have different laws with regard to dispensing hearing aids and who can dispense them. So you need to know that in your community. All right, who can dispense them legally and what are the terms? Now, in Pennsylvania, you have to be a licensed hearing aid dealer with training and, of course, a yearly license, as well as a doctor or an audiologist. I'll be honest, I don't know the laws and rules in other parts of the country, number one. Number two, with Pennsylvania, that you have a 30-day trial that you can try the hearing aid. If it doesn't work, you bring it back, and you should get most all your money back. There may be a small fitting fee of $30, $40, $50 that you pay. But that's the law in Pennsylvania. So you need to know the law in your state. But, you know,
wow.
As far as with, yeah, it's just interesting, Mark. It's a,
yeah,
you know, a whole science, and it's a whole industry. You know, hearing loss is a billion-dollar history, a billion-dollar a billion-dollar health care cost in this country. And, you know, we spend an awful lot of money on this. So we want our patients to get good care. The other thing, Mark, with this hearing loss, being a physician that handles it, there are many programs that our state has to help the people that need hearing amplification. And coming to a doctor, it's a great thing to do because we're aware of all this. You know, some of the lower-level professionals don't have the same access to this to give their patients care that's available, to be honest, at no charge to the patient. So, you know, you want to go to the right store is all I'm saying. Let's go to a professional. Let's not go ahead and try to cheap out on this. The other thing with hearing aids, Mark, are the magnets. They need to be maintained. And, you know, you want to go to a facility that's going to be there, that's going to be there if you have an emergency or a crisis with your hearing aid. If the warranty, you know, is in effect and you lose the hearing aid, they're there to go ahead and take care of you. So you want to deal with quality people with your health care. And, Mark, that's the real essence of our show. Let's deal with quality people, quality health care, make our health better for our patients.
Right.
And that's what our goal
you
is,
know,
Mark. That's what you and I have talked about.
Well, I'll tell you,
know,
you bring up some great points, and we're getting a lot of questions, and some are now pertaining to other things. Sally from Burlington, Vermont, regular listener, she was the one that used to come in here and talk about when you guys were talking about the Bell's palsy stuff.
Yes.
She basically says with prescriptions, are the generics just as good as the other prescriptions when you go to
brand
a pharmacy
name
and stuff? Wow, that's a great question because sometimes we don't know the answer to that.
You know, there's two ways to buy drugs. One, of course, is prescription drugs brand name. The second, of course, is prescription generic. Realize, and I think we all know this, that the brand name drug is more expensive than the generic. The reason being, there's more expense in production of the brand name as well as the quality control. All right? The way these drugs are manufactured, specifications, the way they're analyzed to make sure the drugs that are in that tablet are appropriate and at the right concentration, that's where the cost is, Mark, in that analysis. With generics, it's very loose, and a lot of the generics legally don't have to have that quality control. That's the difference. You know, and some people will say, well, you know, I take a thyroid pill. I was taking this blue thyroid pill, and I was fine. The next time I went to the pharmacy, they gave me a red thyroid pill, the same dosage, and I reacted to it. Well, Mark, it's because there was lack of consistency of active ingredient in that pill. That's why they had a reaction. And so, you know, when you're doing your drugs and if you're sensitive to medications, insist on if you're getting a generic, you want the same generic product if you can tolerate it. you're more sensitive, then you've got to pay for the brand name, but you know you're buying quality. Does that help at all, Mark?
Yeah, I think that helps in more ways than one. And when you look at that, Doc, and we're getting loaded now with more questions pertaining to prescription drugs and stuff. The problem is, I think, and now Tom from Dallas coming in saying, well, the problem a lot of people, why they get the generics is, we're living in a state right now where prices are going through the roof, inflation, gas, and everything. So people feel they're getting the same thing,
sure.
and they're saving money at the same time. Case in point, he says, fish oil. You go buy fish oil, you can spend $12, or you can get a triple-strength bottle of fish oil and spend $27. And the reason being, they're both fish oils, but one's going to be a little more potent than the other. Wow.
Well,
I'll tell you, we might need 2 hours down the road with all these questions, my friend.
Mark, they're going to wear me out if we do 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
If we can. Now, you're talking about over-the-counter, non-prescription drugs with fish oil. Mark, you need to look at the label. He mentioned the word potency. Look at the percentage of fish oil in that product. It varies. If he's taking fish oil on his own, maybe he needs to get a little bit of advice either from a nutritionist or his doctor about what strength should I be taking. Also, where is it made? You know, is it made in Mexico, Venezuela, Peru? Where's the fish oil coming from? Or is it American made? So it's a matter, you know, as we've just talked, Mark, you know, our consumer needs to beware. They need to be a good shopper. They need to know what they're buying, Mark, which takes responsibility and a little bit of education. But you need to be responsible for your health. The market doesn't do that. We need to do that. And that's the point about being educated and listening to good medical shows. We want to educate you, but you need to go out of the market and then be responsible when you're buying product. Does that help, do you think, Mark?
I think it does, and now we've got Albert coming in from Poway, California, saying, yeah, you get what you pay for. If you get something that's cheap and you think it's going to do the same as the other one, there's a reason why one's more expensive than the other. Good take, and I ditto their thoughts, Doc. I really enjoy this show each and every week. And Albert seems to be a regular on a lot of shows in this network, so it's nice to see Albert jumping in and throwing 2 cents in this.
Well, thank you, Mark, if I can. Albert, thank you very much for listening and being consistent with our network. You know, as far as the old story, you're correct. You get what you pay for, but you still need to know what you're buying. Everybody likes a deal. Everybody likes a discount. But let's make sure that we're not paying a price for something that really is inexpensive being made, and we're paying a cheap price, but it's not giving us the result with our body that we're expecting. So the cheap is okay if you're still getting quality. You need to know. You need to know what you're buying. And again, always go out, get a second opinion. Check on that product. Go to a GNC. Go to an additional nutritional store. Go to Whole Foods, where they have a variety of these products. Read the labels. That's why the government put them on, to help educate us so that we as consumers buy good things and we know what we're buying.
Jim from Modesto, California, chiming in and basically says, you know, since we're talking about generics and everything, how about protein shakes? Sometimes you can get stuff that's different at 99-cent type of stores, and they have an influx of these protein drinks, or you can go into the vitamin barn, stuff like that, like you're alluding to, GNC, Doc, and they're twice the money, but they're the same exact product. What's the reason? Is there an overflow coming into the discount stores that they're trying to move the product before it expires? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Product does expire, number one. But number two, let's not assume all protein shakes are the same.
Right.
All right? And my understanding is he felt the protein shake at Venue 1 was the same as Venue 2. The price was more expensive. I think we need to find out what kind of protein. You know, is it the cheapy protein that's around is bovine. And you'll see that bovine protein in candy bars, as well as, you know, energy bars, as well as protein drinks. You need to look at that label plus the concentration of protein so that overall when you're going to the protein shake bar, even though it's a pain in the butt for them, find out what's in that shake. What's the concentration of protein? How much sugar is in there in addition? So that you need to be a little bit educated. Now, there's a variety of these shake stores around everywhere, Pennsylvania included, and no doubt in California, Florida. But they have a list of ingredients, which is your right to have. Find out what you're drinking, all right? And the price is a whole different story. But the first thing is, what are you drinking? And, again, what's the concentration? What's the quality? Now you can make a comparison. Is it worth the price? And that's a little bit of, you know, what we should do in the marketplace. We need to go ahead and be a good consumer. The other thing, though, is do we need to go ahead and take the protein? Is the protein shake something we need? And, again, you need to talk to your healthcare professional. Realize, you know, with additional protein, it could have an effect on your kidneys and your liver. So that at this point, you know, what I would say is talk to your healthcare provider. Has lab work been done to check your kidney filtration? You know, do you need the protein? What's your protein levels? Mark, you need to get educated before we just go out and start drinking these things that people are selling.
Yeah, Michael from Bucks County, PA, chiming in on the fish oil that was brought up earlier. He said, you got to watch that. Sometimes if you take too much of it, it is not good for the liver. Wow.
Absolutely correct. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, fish oil, we're talking about essential fatty acids. And, you know, we all need a little bit of a fatty acid. It's good for our brain function. It does good for our gut with regard to lubrication in our gut. But realize your body has to filter that. And it goes through the liver. It goes through the kidneys. So, again, we have to make sure we need to take it and who's telling us to take it. You know, where are we getting our advice? We need to make sure we have somebody credible that we can trust that says to us, yes, you know, your essential fatty acids are a little bit light. You need to have a little bit more. You know, the fish oil may be the way to go. But indeed, Mark, realize it needs to be customized. Everyone's body is a little bit different, and their filtration systems are a little bit different. So, you know, indeed, get good advice on your body, what your body needs before we, you know, just don't listen to the TV because they tell us to take it. If I can expand, Mark, just on one other item.
Yeah.
And that's aspirin. You know, I have patients that come in that says, oh, they tell me to take an aspirin every day. Who tells you? Well, I see it on TV. You know, I heard my neighbor takes aspirin every other day. Mark, it's important. Do we need to take it? And, again, if so, let's do the appropriate dosage. But don't just do it helter-skelter. Your body's a finely tuned machine. You want to give it what it needs. not what somebody else thinks you need that doesn't know your body, okay?
Yeah, exactly that. And let me get to this comments. Ray coming in from New York basically said, I've heard if you take a baby aspirin every day, it, you know, more or less cures you from ever getting an aneurysm. That's an interesting one. I never heard that one, but
I never heard
we're,
that.
We're getting educated across the board, and you're educating these listeners.
Well, you know what? They're educating me as well. The questions are really thought-provoking. Now, the purpose of aspirin, as it exists and has, is aspirin makes our blood and clotting thinner so that overall don't form in the small arteries going into our brain causing a stroke. That was the purpose of aspirin. So go ahead, you know, there's tissue in our blood called platelets. Platelets form blood clots. The aspirin decreases the platelet function so you don't clot as easily. And again, a complication from that, if you're cut, you bleed, your nose bleeds easier, there can be blood in your urine. But again, as far as an aneurysm is like a bubbling of an artery. It's weakening of the wall. To my understanding and my education, I don't believe aspirin does that, does not cause an aneurysm, but it does cause the blood to thin. The other thing with aspirin, which does really play a role on talking today, is causes hearing loss. Aspirin is ototoxic, meaning that aspirin damages the hair cells in our inner ear as well as causes tinnitus. Just a little bit of an overlay. I hope I didn't get too extensive on that answer, Mark, but aspirin does not cause aneurysms.
Yeah, well, we got Steve coming in from Corvallis, Oregon, chiming in. He's another regular guy to listen to this great show. He said, Doc, maybe you can help me. Every time I renew my license at the DMV, they have me take an eye test and close in one eye and then close in the other eye. What's the reason for this? I'm not really losing my – I can still see while I'm driving. What's the reason for me closing eyes? Are they going to put glasses – that I need to have on my DMV driver's license. Wow.
well, you know, the DMV is a little out of my scope, as well as eyes are out of my scope. You know, I'm more a specialist in ear, nose, and throat. But with regard to, again, I'll try to handle that question. You know, we want to see his ability to focus each eye independently. That's why they do that. His ability to focus. And indeed, they have a criteria that if he's not able to do that, then he may require correction of those vision in order for him to maintain his license. And, you know, I'm not an expert on this, so I don't want to give bad information.
Right.
But indeed, it is a check. You know, again, Mark, it falls into our, you know, we've been talking about loss of our senses, hearing, taste, smell, vision is another one that can go. And again, it's a little out of my scope, Mark, so I don't want to elaborate too much and put any misinformation out there to this gentleman. But I would say, you know, he should see, you know, his healthcare professional if they would question the quality of his vision.
Yeah, that's a great one. And as we break down loss and taste and everything, you know, it's unbelievable when you see some of these come through and you break them down. Martha from Carson City, Nevada, chiming in, a first-time listener, talking about nosebleeds. Basically, in the summertime, she says she gets a few of them, more so than the winter. Is it because of the heat? Wow.
Sure. And, you know, nosebleeds are definitely a problem. You know, the medical term for nosebleeds is epistaxis. Epistaxis is how we talk about nosebleeds in the medical literature. And again, what that has to do with The nose is very, very vascular. The nasal septum, or the petition that separates the right from the left side of the nose, has a tremendous amount of blood flow. Normally, this blood flow is covered with membranes in the nose that are a little bit tough, so that overall changes in the humidity, moisture, you know, in the air, dryness in the air, tend not to affect it. But again, when it's hot out, our body cools itself by these blood vessels engorging, all right, or increasing blood flow to disperse the heat. Could be that, again, in the process of this, she has some dry, scabby little blood vessels in the nose that when they're attempting to open, they tend to break, and she bleeds. It could be a moisture problem in the nose, Mark. And again, I wonder if she's on aspirin, so that, you know, overall aspirin would precipitate something like that. If she has an ongoing dry nose in the summertime, Mark, there's a variety of different over-the-counter nasal gels and very buffered saline solutions that, because of the low salt content, moisturize the nasal lining. When they moisturize it, Mark, they keep it from getting brittle and keep it from having these small blood vessels fracture and bleed. So that I think, Mark, moisture may be an issue. Aspirin could be an issue. Mark, and the third thing, which, again, no disrespect to this gal, we have people that, you know, tend to be a little aggressive with their nose and their nasal cleaning, and they kind of remove the scabs. They pick at it. And that is definitely a no-no, because those membranes, even though they're tough, they can get infected, and indeed we can scratch them and they bleed. That's the best I can come up with there, Mark.
Well, and not only that, to add on to that, Doc, you know, if you have the bloody nose, like Martha was alluding to from Carson City, what ends up happening with that is when that I've tend to seen this before with my own experience.
Sure.
If you have a bloody nose, it clots. And then you think, okay, now I can hardly, you know, breathe through my nostrils, so you kind of pick at it. And then all of a sudden, here we go with the bloody nose again. So you haven't
given it
an adequate amount of time, I would believe, in not letting it really harden up there where it would come out on its own. Is that true?
Yes, Mark. You know, we talk about some of these, Mark, as chronic diseases. Chronic means ongoing recurrence. And with, say, a nosebleed, Mark, people tend to bleed periodically. And the reason is they don't allow the nasal membranes to heal. So that, you know, overall, what we want to see, if someone starts to have a problem like that, you need to look at their medications. You need to look at their blood pressure. You need to look into the nose to see overall what the quality of the tissues are. But, Mark, once a little symptom like that starts, we need to get professional help so it doesn't become a chronic problem. Mark, I have patients with nosebleeds from a variety of causes, especially maybe picking them and ongoing crust and scab. Mark, they've actually dug a hole through the petition in the nose, and they end up with a septal perforation, which is a hole in that division between the two membranes, that the tissues have died and we're left with a hole. And that is a very chronic situation that continues to bleed. So it's something that when these little problems start, let's make sure we get into the docs with maybe as other problems we're dealing with. But let's get in and get an opinion on this so that we can help from making it a more serious issue. And, you know, some of these problems, Mark, are a one-visit situation. They can come in, have their professional look, see how their blood pressure is, if necessary, check their clotting, maybe put them on a moisturizer. So there's a variety of things that can be done without anybody having to do extensive care here, especially earlier on in the process.
Unbelievable to break that thing down. And when you look at, as we're down to the last 20 minutes of this great show, the debut of an hour here, Doc Talk Podcast, hosted by Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly producing it, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Doc, when you look at the put a cap on the loss of taste and smell, when we kind of look at that now and we've talked about it, we've talked about, you know, some of it's caused by the COVID issues and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some of it be caused by, you know, allergies and, you know, things like that. When you look at this and your experience and expertise and knowledge, what is the most common effect of this, where the loss of taste and smell come from?
Well, you know what? Mark's a very good question, a very big question overall, you know,
yeah.
And there's no, Mark, with loss of taste and loss of smell, what that does to our patient, Mark, it has to do with quality of life. All right. It's, you know, what are the good things in life? You know, it's food, it's pleasant smells, beautiful taste, right? That's what it is. It's loss of those quality things that we do. So we want to protect it. Mark, but you know, when we start to have a problem, you know, and again, I have patients, Mark, that have been healthy for years, and then in their later years, as they age a bit, things change, and they don't do anything for 4 or 5 or 6 years. And sometimes the problems aren't solvable. But most times, Mark, you know, we talk about, you know, again, loss of taste. You know, the biggest thing that we're losing on that one, which does affect our elderly people, is the saliva. You know, our loss of taste has to do with dry mouth. It has to do with infection in the tissues of the mouth. Remember we talked about gingivitis, periodontitis, those kind of issues. We can get infections in the tongue called glossitis. Remember, radiation therapy dries up our mouth. Reflux. Remember gastric reflux, Mark? That
right.
Little guy can cause a loss here as well. And if you give me another minute, I have a few more causes to kind of cap this up if you'd like me to proceed.
Yes.
You know, just, yeah, if you don't mind. If going forward, Mark, with regard to both taste and smell, Mark, we're in a drug society. You know, I can't tell you how many of my patients come in. Mark, they bring a list of drugs in that they're on. Some of them are 2 pages of drugs that they take every day. And, Mark, again, these drugs, even though they may be necessary, they need to be looked at periodically. But exposure to those drugs can damage our taste receptors as well as our smell receptors. You know, and as we go on, we have people in industry. They've been exposed to chemicals, toxins, different heavy metals. That can affect the nose, the smell. Mark, which means, Mark, you got to protect yourself. You know, if you're, you know, working in a factory, you're working in furnaces, you're working around, you know, chemicals, metals, Mark, you got to protect yourself. Ventilation, respirators, because once these tissues are damaged, Mark, they don't regenerate. You know, the easier ones are more like vitamin deficiencies or mineral deficiencies. And in particular, 12, as well as zinc, those are the culprits that can tend to loss of taste. All right? So we need to get an evaluation from our healthcare professional. Hey, is my B12 low? What am I doing with my zinc? Should I be taking some of it? Just don't take it. Mark, the other thing is diabetes. We need to make sure that if our sugars aren't controlled, we get them controlled. You know, diabetes affects nerves throughout our body with smell, with taste. Mark, the last thing
question.
Is aging, and I'll just wrap it up here. You know, as we all age, our bodies break down. And indeed, it affects everything that we do. We want to take care of this organism. We need to maintain it. And, Mark, that's our message, as we've talked in the pre-chat. You know, we need to take care of our bodies. And, Mark, that's the purpose of our show, is to let our listeners know, let's take care of this organism so it gives us good service. And as we age, we age gracefully, but indeed still able to enjoy the pleasures of life. That's the
exactly.
Now,
well, you basically, you know, the listeners educate us to a certain point, and with your expertise, you educate them. Brian coming in from Independence, Missouri, and basically says he knows some of his friends. They'll take a multivitamin, they'll take another vitamin, they'll take a vitamin to go to sleep. Isn't that too many things you're putting in your system? And sometimes they could coexist against each other, I would imagine. Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I've seen that with some of my friends, Doc, where they'll take a multivitamin, they'll take another vitamin, then at night they'll take a sleeping pill or whatever because they can't sleep for sleeping disorders. And I'm saying to myself, how many pills are you taking, and is that actually good for you?
Sure. Mark, I think the question, the observation, is so timely today. And as I mentioned to you, Mark, people that I have seen in my practice are just so medicated. Indeed, it's so important. Do we need the medication? Do we need to go ahead and take care of that disease only with medication? You know, we need to maintain our health. Mark, and what does that mean? That means we've got to look at our diet. All right? Let's take, you know, good care of what we put in our mouth. Our protein, our antioxidants goes with our veggies, our fruits. You know, number one, exercise. This body needs exercise. If you don't, Mark, we deposit the fat around our bellies. It compresses our blood vessels. It leads to strokes. So getting on to the question with regard to multiple vitamins, supplements, et cetera, indeed, do you need to take it? The answer is, I don't know. If you do feel you need, because you have something called a malabsorption syndrome, that your body can't absorb nutrients that it needs, Mark, it's time then to take a multiple vitamin. But your healthcare professional needs to help you. And I always say, let's get another opinion here, all right? And, you know, nutrients, supplements, Mark, there are hundreds of them because people, you know, again, they're advertised that this supplement will help you sleep, you'll have better relaxation, you'll have better sex, you'll have better digestion, you'll be able to lose weight. You've seen the commercials.
Yeah.
Let's not buy into that. Let's look at what our system is, what it needs, but let's take care of it before it breaks down. And indeed, those vitamins are good, supplements are good, but that doesn't mean you as an individual need to take them. That's my take on that, Mark.
No, and you know, you bring up a great point on that because, you know, I've always said, and this is just my opinion on it, that I'll take a multivitamin in the morning, and I'm not really mixing anything till about 6, 7, 8 hours later if I'm taking something else, whether it's an aspirin or anything like that, because I just think, you know, with the way, you know, you know, it's almost like, and now we're getting somebody coming in. Bob coming in from Oceanside saying it's kind of like cleaning supplies. If you clean your bathroom and you don't have a ventilation in there and you start mixing ammonia with Comet and stuff, you know, it creates a problem with your lungs. You can die from it. So the question is, with vitamins, you mix too many of these things and you start not knowing what the results are, it can cause some serious problems.
You're absolutely right. Mark, you know, with regard to vitamins, there are two families of vitamins. There are the water-soluble vitamins and then the fat-soluble vitamins. Vitamins A, D, E, and K are fat-soluble. And overall, you can get overdosed on them. Vitamin C is water-soluble. And you can take as much vitamin C as you want. And then what you'll notice, Mark, your urine's yellow. Have you ever noticed that?
Right.
And, you know, so vitamin C you can't overdose on. But vitamins A, D, D as in dog, E and K are not. You can take too much of that and it becomes toxic in your body. So
right.
You need to know, do I need to take it? And if I do need to take it, what dose do I need? And that's where I think we need to get another opinion. We need to, you know, talk to our healthcare provider about what do we need, what's a good regime of healthcare for each individual's body. But Mark, it's taking responsibility for our healthcare in doing that. You know, so we need to, you know, as we do a financial checkup, as we do an investment checkup, we need to have our bodies looked at too for what it needs to be healthy.
Well, and as you speak on those terms, another great listener coming in saying, thank you very much, Doc, for the reminder about diabetes. That's a killer disease too. And we know, matter of fact, on that note, I had a friend that lost part of his leg with diabetes and the insulation and putting the shot in and stuff like that. Man, that you know, I don't know what the percentage is of that, Doc, with people having diabetes compared to people that don't, but that percentage is going to be pretty high these days with everything out there and sodas and candies and stuff like that.
Yes, well, diabetes, as you know, has to do with the insulin production in our pancreas, all right? And it has to do with how we metabolize sugars. So, Mark, you know, number one, if you one is diabetic or has a family history of diabetes, we need to go ahead and get some help with that. And there's all kind of tools to regulate our blood sugars, to measure our blood sugars that are out there. But we need to take advantage of them. And if we are diabetic, Mark, we need to have good dietary intake. We need to get, you know, a nutritionist or a food planner to help with our diet. Again, there's medications, there's insulin, there's metformin, there's a variety of things. But overall, if we can go out, exercise, watch our diet, you know, manage our eating, maybe we don't need those medications as much and still maintain a very healthy body. So again, Mark, it's taking responsibility for our health. It's a job to do that. But
no doubt about it. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as we wind this thing down with about 6 minutes left in this great show, you know, we're touching on a lot of issues that are everyday life that people might not think about, but now they're kind of hearing this show, getting a sensibility of what's going on and really looking at it from afar. We've got Jan coming in, and she's coming in from, trying to think where she's coming in from, Germantown, PA. Okay, must be over near Philadelphia. Okay. She basically says, talking about the drum, eardrum, and the wax you guys have talked about in the past, the buildup, is there something, if I don't see a medical doctor on that, and, you know, it's not really bad, how do I know if it's really bad or not, where, you know, I can get away with an over-the-counter product compared to walking in and seeing a medical examiner?
That's a good question. It's a good question, and, you know, it's a matter of how do we know?
Yeah.
Well, Mark, number one is history. Has she had a problem with wax before? And wax is healthy. Wax is good. It's good to have wax. It protects the skin of the ear canal. By, you know, people trying to take care of it or remedy it themselves, Mark, they cut the ear canal, they scratch the ear canal, they damage the skin of the ear canal. And typically what we're doing on a lot of times is putting them on a regime of medication to help heal damaged ear canals so they reproduce wax. And, you know, again, what I'd like to go ahead and depart here is let's have the right healthcare professional look at that problem. If we're saying it's earwax or my hearing's plugged, let's go to the healthcare professional and have him or her look at the situation, give you an analysis. You know, I have mothers that will go out and buy little otoscopes to look in their kid's ear and, you know, try to go ahead and clean wax out or diagnose an ear infection. Well, that's wonderful, but when we're dealing with this sense of hearing, let's not cheap out. Let's give our families, let's give ourselves the best care that we can, Mark. And again, you know, once we have our diagnosis, once we have our maintenance, all we'll do is take care of it on an ongoing basis so it doesn't get worse. And a little maintenance here, Mark, goes a long way.
No doubt about it. And I'll take one more question from these guys. Joe from Marlboro, Mass. Says, yeah, you can't shorten that, Jan, out there in Germantown, PA. He basically says it's kind of like going to a CVS or one of these drugstores and having the pharmacy give you an in-depth thing. They can't. It pays to go to see somebody like the doc. They actually tell you what's wrong with you more so than people guessing.
Well, I think that's a very good observation. And, you know, Mark, if indeed we do that with our health care, if we implement good standards of care, you know, at home, good nutrition, maintenance on our health care, Mark, our bodies last an awful lot longer, and we don't have the crises. You know, the goal of a health care is to maintain a nice level slope as opposed to deep valleys and peaks. You know, we don't want that roller coaster with our health care. We don't want the crises. We don't want to have the chest pain. We don't want to have the need to go to the emergency room. Let's avoid that by good daily health care, helping to prevent a crisis situation. So I agree.
So as you put the recap on what we've talked about, and we're down to about a little over 3 minutes, where would we put this in perspective for the listeners as far as the hearing aids now after we put the loss of taste and smell to bed?
Well, thank you again, Mark. We had a great show. And, you know, as far as, again, what I like to talk about, as you know, is let's go to the right professional. Let's not cheat ourselves on our health care. Let's compromise someplace else if we need to do that financially. What I did want to say is that with regard to hearing, hearing loss, hearing aids, the future is very bright. And the bright spot of this is stem cell therapy, Mark, where down the road, and we're probably about 4 to 5 years away, the research tells us, of maybe stem cell therapy injected into our inner ear to regenerate the hearing cells. If indeed, you know, we're there, we're going to avoid the need for hearing aids, hearing amplifications, cochlear implants, bone-anchored hearing aids. So it's a very bright future for our health care in this country and to improve the quality of our patients' hearing without, again, hearing aids. That's, again, 4 to 5 years is kind of, you know, the edge of it. But in our lifetimes, I think we're going to be able to regenerate these cells and have our patients hear better without having to wear amplifiers. That's the bright spot in my estimation today, Mark.
Well, as we wrap this thing up, you can preview next week. We should probably have a guest. You'll let me know and let everybody else know where, you know, your great establishment there is in Pittsburgh. If they're in the greater Pittsburgh area, they can stop by, say hi to you, tell them they listen to the show, say hi to your great staff.
You know, again, Mark, the best way to get a hold of us is gjrmd308@outlook.com. And again, I'll be more than glad to answer the emails, be glad to help answer the questions. I try to stay in my level of expertise, in my field of expertise, to give you good information and not any guessing. So I do the best I can with that. If something is a little out of my field, I'll get you to the right people. And if you're in Pittsburgh, email us. And again, you can sure drop over. Love to see you. Love to chat with you. But again, we're a very busy practice, but we're there to help. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you guys, if you want to take note on this, the doc will make a guest appearance in Fresno, California this Monday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mark Men Magnus podcast hosted by Mark Heffernan there. So take note of that. We'll be back next Saturday same time across the airwaves, 10:30 on the east, 7:30 on the west, for another 60 minutes of medical advice and breaking this thing down across the boards. For Dr. Greg Roscoe out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly, Mark Mancini, in Los Angeles, saying stay safe, bring your questions back to the forefront next week. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.